Good evening. This is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY. My guest this evening is Dr. Chris Boryak, Professor of Political Science and Director of Muhlenberg College's Institute of Public Opinion, a guy I want to be like when I grow up. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
This evening, we are going to review the results of the Greater Chamber of Commerce Cameron Afshar Survey of Local Businesses, which was conducted in July 2018. Just a little background. We have been doing this since 1998. Yeah, we have been doing this for a long, long time. I'm really old. In July, the Lehigh Valley's Business Sentiment Index dropped by 2.8% below its April's level, while still it is trending up. July drop was unexpected. Chris, you are heavily involved in all of these things. What have you seen?
Well, as you can guess, Cameron, when you're thinking about political economy and the relationship between government, fiscal policy, monetary policy, and sentiment among businesses and industry, things, in addition to the what people are experiencing day to day, things that are happening in Washington, things that are happening in the state, certainly could have effects on how people are processing their economic outlook. And, you know, we were in a period over the last few months where trade tensions have certainly elevated based on some of the decisions that are being made in Washington. Questions regarding the uncertainty surrounding those potential situations moving forward and increasing possibilities of added tariffs are having an effect. Clearly, as you know, we're on a very good economic standing on a macroeconomic level. Individual sentiment is generally high. But there are some warning signs out there, and I think your results from this particular survey pick up that there's some concern and uncertainty that might be weighing down some of the broader positive news that's been coming out over the last few years.
Yes, that is very true. And the interesting part is that despite all these increases, we see that consumer sentiment, business sentiment for July shows an actual drop, a statistically significant drop, which at this point in time was unexpected. We were expecting this to happen a little bit later on, but not at this point. And clearly the tariffs have a major effect. As a matter of fact, one of our guests who couldn't make it today was telling me the other day that they are adding some buildings to their operations, and their contractor told them that since you have signed all of these contracts, we have increased our prices by 30% because our cost is going up. And as a result of that, we have to pass it through. And said, what type of cost going? Said, oh, we have aluminum and steel and all of these things. And in all these industrial buildings, that's the main thing that people use. And that has an effect.
Yeah, most certainly, right? You experience it in the direct cost that are associated with those building and construction aspects of the economy. But there, as I mentioned, the uncertainty about moving forward, and that's, I think, there's a lot of questions that are being raised by businesses about where we're headed. Will the tensions regarding tariffs back down and lead to some more trade agreements and some open trade, or will they ramp up? And so you, as someone that studied this for a very long time, know the effects of uncertainty, right? Uncertainty for economists and for businesses is one of the major points of leading to decisions that are not necessarily associated with growth.
True. And in terms of tariffs, they, like wars, they always end in some sort of an agreement. It is just the process in between that is damaging to all parties. For U.S. in this century, 1930s tariff laws were the worst possible because as soon as they were enforced, the other countries retaliated and raised theirs, and then U.S. did, and the same thing goes on. And that was at the beginning of the Great Recession. And that added to everything, dropped international trade by 65%. There was no party involved in that battle that didn't take heavy damages. This is one of those things that people count their winning as, well, I wasn't hurt as bad as the other guy. And that is, it may be work in a high school battle, but not necessarily in the international environment. U.S., we did that in 2002 as well, but as it went through, the discovery was that it's not working. The excellent idea at the time was, okay, it's not working, and they withdrew it. They didn't double it. They didn't increase it. When they discovered 2003, it was just quietly withdrawn, and everything went back the way it was. So in the long-winded economist way of responding, yes, eventually we will get to an agreement, but how long until we all get to be on the same page? There was an across-the-board drop in the indices in our model, with plans for future purchases showing the largest loss, falling by 3.6% below its April's level. Purchasing plans for future is the only index in the model that has now dropped below its last year's level. And in addition, for a smaller percent of local companies planning to increase their future purchases, those who are planning to increase, we have seen that they are reducing the amount of how much they are going to increase. So we have calculated a new indicator to show the momentum of movement for these indices. And the index of future purchases, the momentum for the index of future purchases shows dropping since the beginning of this year, since beginning of 2018. It is showing that it is dropping. The second largest drop was in index of purchases over the last 6 months, again, closely tied with purchasing in the future, which also dropped significantly below its April's level. And this one, also people are reducing the percent of that raise in their purchases as well, even for those who have increased it. They're increased it by a smaller percentage. So momentum for this one is also down. On the other hand, when we get to the hiring plans, now that's the one that shows the most explosive growth over the last 6 months. Actually, this index in April was at its highest level in this century. In 1998, late 88 and early 99, it exceeded this, but in this century, it was at its highest level in April, and it dropped significantly in July. Still, it is a very significant thing. As indices go, it's trending up. It was trending up, and it is now at a very high level, sort of leveling off, but this showed that people hired a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you could see it. I mean, and hear it, you know, when we're talking to individuals and in our public opinion surveys and others, it's a very robust job market right now. Yeah. And it's a great time if you're entering the job market, by the way, with opportunities. You could see the demand for employment locally. And you're picking on up this in your survey very nicely, Cameron, that local businesses are fighting for employees in many cases. And you know, historically, as an economist, and this is where the real interesting things get, that usually leads to higher wages and higher income levels. There's where you're looking at some of the perhaps the rates, the unemployment rates going down and the demand for labor markets not quite matching up with increases in income levels and salary levels across the country. Not that they haven't been rising, but I think that disconnect in some ways is one of the most salient features of the current economic situation in the United States and also on a local level.
Yes, that is one of the most fascinating parts from a researcher point of view, that economy is doing well, everything is going great. We are in a tight labor market. In Lehigh Valley, this is the fourth tight labor market in 40 years. This is the fourth time we are here. And wages are barely moving up. Now we expect that they would move up a little bit more. But up to now, they should have been going up a lot faster than before. And part of that comes because of the change in the format of the labor force. And we're going to be talking about that a little bit later on. That explains some of these issues. For example, the percent of people over 60, members of the labor force who are over 65, has increased significantly since 2007, actually gone up something like 60%, while the percent of people between 24 and 54 has dropped. And this explains some of that aspect, because if I had already a job, I retired, I'm collecting my pension and all of those things, and I still want to be active, and I get a job, I'll accept a lot of lower wages and stuff like that. And then I'm competing with a kid that's just coming out of college and needs to buy a house, have babies, and expenses of all of these things, and cannot afford to take the lower expense because there is no pension extra that it's coming, and the house is not paid by this time, and all of those aspects that people who have retired one time already are enjoying.
Yeah, and I think that's so well said, and part of the intricacies and the nuances of a labor market, right? We think of it kind of on these macro indicators, the unemployment rate, or income levels during any period, and the relationship between those is driven by so many of the factors you're talking about. Who are the people that are entering? Who are the people that are exiting? What point of their lives are they entering? Their needs are very different, and their demands are very different, and that can shape those aspects of salaries and income levels that we're seeing. And it's why economists have such fun questions to try and answer, and some of the uncertainty and those rules that we talk about historically from a political economic perspective, right? That when unemployment goes down, we usually see unemployment levels that salaries rise, right? Because of demand, but it's never perfectly linear. It's never perfect, right? Yeah. There's things that shape those things, and those rules are bent. You know, they might be on the major level pretty solid, but not necessarily perfect. It would make life much easier, and that's what's the nature of, as I always say, as a social scientist, an economist, a psychologist, we're dealing with humans, right? We're dealing with humans. Trying to model exactly how they behave and the impacts of things is very, very difficult.
And, so very true.
We could see these broad trends, and they're really powerful to look at and understand, but some of those details that you talked about, I think, are why it's always a much more complex situation.
Yeah, and there is, when you see not only the change in the composition of labor force, the change or inclusion of labor force which is not even resident on this continent. They could be living in a different continent. I mean, how many of us try to get our equipment fixed and talk with somebody we know that person is not living in the United States because they have accent like me, and they talk and say, just tell me which city are you in?
Yeah.
And because companies don't have to hire somebody here to make to answer that kind of a call. In your type of business, for making the call, you need people to be more or less here.
Yeah, we do, at least in our research at the Institute.
Yes. Yeah. And when we looked at the index of business plans for hiring in the next 6 months, we also see that this is trending up. However, it looks like that it has reached a plateau at a very high level. And Part of that, of course, is due to the fact that while businesses are expanding, they would still need these special requirements as to who they want to hire. As much as you need more employees, is not a homogeneous concept, not employee. You need somebody to do this particular thing. And the labor pool, which has been thinning, not only in the amount, but also in technology, in the people, expertise in different fields. I was been told by a client that they have been looking for welders, and they are willing to pay a large amount of signing bonus for professional welders to sign in, and they can't find enough to get to the speed that they need to get to.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that, and that welding example tends to be very common when you hear and you're talking to employers and groups, that particular specialty, right? And you think about that historically, the ability to weld and work with metals, and having that skill set, and at a particular time like this, just the search and the demand for people with that particular skill set is so enormous. And that's, you think about the things that your survey's picking up, the construction, the industry, in those fields right now, for skilled labor, the demands are excessively high.
Yeah, and everybody thinks that skilled labor is only computer programmers and stuff like that. By far from it, there are so many categories. It is just as the economy is expanding in all areas, these specialties, you have a technique and knowledge that is being used. That is something is very, very valuable right now, and not enough of it going around.
Bricks, mortar, and metal still matter.
Yes, that's the interesting part, that we have not moved beyond that aspect yet.
Yeah.
Very good. We are reaching our first break. This is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Folk music, from folk classics to the Gaelic traditions of the British Isles, to bluegrass and old-time music of Appalachia, to the modern-day singer-songwriters telling the story of today's world. You'll find it all on WDIY. Listen and enjoy the wide variety of folk music every weekday evening, 7 to 9 p.m., just after NPR news headlines, and Sunday mornings at 11 a.m., here on WDIY.
Good evening. This is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY. My guest this evening is Dr. Chris Boryak from Muhlenberg College. Okay, Chris, we went through the planned hiring and actual hiring in the past. And now one of the other interesting parts that our survey discovered is percent of businesses who have laid off or have expanded their employment over the last 6 months. And the most intriguing part for me is that the layoff ratio now is lower than what it was during the boom years leading to the Great Recession. That back then was about 8 to 10%. Now it's dropped to 5%, and it is trending even further down. Nobody wants to lay off. And that is very, very interesting in this market, because it's unusual. 2005, 6, and part of 7 were an example of the time that things did very, very well.
Yeah, I think this is in radio where you'd love to be able to show
a picture.
Yeah. And the graph that you have in your report really tells the tale of how the lines on both hiring and layoffs are just expanding, and the gap between those two since 2010 when it crossed over, right?
Yeah.
You think during the Great Recession,
correct?
At the end of the Great Recession, where layoffs were outpacing, still outpacing hiring all the way up until about 2010, and we're on an 8-year period, and those curves that we look at are headed continually in a direction of positive hiring and positive news on lower layoffs. And that really does. So many of these indicators, right, as you weave the narrative of the local economy. And these types of pieces of evidence, right, of just how robust the job market is right now and how much companies continue to hire and how much layoffs have become far less common at most local businesses and companies.
Yeah, and hiring part on the other side is also reaching the percent of companies who have hired over the last 6 months. Back in 2005, for example, it was about a little bit 28% or so. Now it's about 30%. So even that in that percent, we are exceeding that part. In reality, employment market in the Lehigh Valley is in a boom environment, and it is going to get tighter and tighter labor market. And this time round, I expect to see measurable increases in wages and salaries, not the general small numbers that we see that is barely exceeding inflation. But by the same token, inflation also is not far away from coming about because of the not only because of tariffs that bring with themselves a built-in inflation, because of the fact that there are so many more people who have money to spend. And if this money was being spent locally, concentrated right here, we would have experienced huge inflation coming in. But because of the fact that although there is a lot more money chasing after goods, they're not chasing after fewer goods because they're not limited to Lehigh Valley. They are expanding all over. The segments that is limited, we're going to see increases like price of food, groceries, stuff like that. They have all experienced increases in those prices. But you want to buy a TV, you look on the internet and buy it. So although income has gone up, expenditure has increased, nationwide expenditure has increased significantly, particularly after the tax break, because for people who receive a paycheck, the distinction between did I get a raise or was this a tax break? Well, tax break and raise have the same effect on the end result. The number is a little larger than it was before, but they are significantly different from one another in terms of long-term impact. So people look at a bigger paycheck and buy more with it. And that's why we have seen such an increase in GDP in the second quarter. Advanced estimate is 4.1. Of course, this is going to go through three more before they put it in the book. And many economists still think that it would be end up around 3.6, which is still a very significant increase. But also the same, many economists expect that the third quarter it would be lower, and by the fourth quarter, the sugar high will be done with, and it will drop to a normal 2.6 or 2.8% growth.
Yeah, I think while from a political perspective, any single quarter that is on the level of what we saw in the second quarter of 2018, you will hear the incumbent president in this case, trumpet up. No pun intended. They're gonna say, hey, look, this is just a wonderful news. Look what we've done, and to a degree, justly so, right? This happens on your watch. These are great numbers. But economists and folks that like to look at the longer picture, right, to see how the year goes off. Those things tend to level off. One quarter, excessive action one or lower action one could always affect the other quarter based on weather and other factors. But come back to one thing you just mentioned about the relationship between inflation and open markets, right? I mean, I think that's something that a lot of people are going to be watching, both locally and nationally over the next few years as we deal and dabble in the world of tariffs and limits on open trade, how that does affect, and as you mentioned, in specific areas in particular, how it might affect inflation in the cost of goods, where you use examples like obviously things like aluminum and how and the role that plays in a lot of aspects of the economy. But that key point, you know, open markets, truly open markets, are a hedge against inflation, right? As long as competition, what keeps competition or inflation down, it's competition,
absolutely,
right? And so anytime you close off a market in some way through a tariff or a blockage of open trade, that starts to come into the picture. And I think talking to economists like yourself, a lot of eyes are on inflation in the next year to see exactly how that plays out.
Because the whole aspect of inflation is a lot of money chasing a few goods. And when during the last century's national economies, you were more or less limited to your national economy, and anything that was crossing was going through a lot of hoops and stuff to get here at higher prices just because of the process, if not tariffs and all of those stuff. But as we move to the latter part of the 20th century and all these trade agreements got around that reduced and in many cases eliminated tariffs, all of a sudden an increase in income in one nation or one region wouldn't create inflation because they would have more demand, but there was the whole continent to provide, and in this case, the whole globe to provide them the goods and services. So the process would have less impact in local areas, even if there were areas which there were excessive amount of money trying chasing goods. It wasn't few goods. There were a lot of goods still. So it would spread that across. But as soon as tariffs come into play, we will go back to the earlier segment of 20th century when you were limited to this area. And in some back then, in some regions, you were limited to regions of even one country because there were process of problems moving from one area to another were not tariffs but expenses that raised the cost of going and as a result caused inflation in different regions. That many economists like me thought that would be something we talk about history of economics, that this is the way it used to be. It is frightening to a lot of economists looking at the possibility of that not being just history and coming to chase us now in the 21st century, age of Jetsons. I'm waiting for my flying car. Guys, it's not time for tariffs going back to 19th century.
Yeah.
Chris, we also checked on the process or the trend in what businesses are planning to do. And we saw that in January, some 70% of local businesses were not planning to hire or lay off, wanted to stay pat. That number dropped to 54% by April, and July it is 60%. So it is trending, still trending down. More and more businesses are trying to get into this market. The way I look at it is maybe a lot of people are worried, they're worried that they may fall behind as other people will get their potential employees away from them. I remember in late 1990s, the telephone companies had a race in terms of a lot of small companies coming up, and they were heavily competitive and wanted to get a larger part of the market. And they had these switches which had something like 50,000 numbers on them, and they were not very expensive initially, and by the end it became like tulips, and they have huge prices going. And I personally know of at least two companies that were very profitable, doing very, very well, and got caught in the current, and neither of them are around now because they are trying to get ahead of competition. And one of it is to make sure that if I get these switches, the other entities cannot get to them, and I'll have all these numbers to me. But then if there are not corresponding customers who want those numbers, then these are just collecting dust. They're very big.
Sure. And that's a challenge, bring, you know, that kind of the analogy back to employment or the story back to employment. I mean, that for local companies, you can see the pressure about employees, right? I mean, it's a tight labor market, and you're looking at your competitors and you're thinking, hey, I don't know if it's going to get any better in the near term. I don't know if there's going to be an expansion of the market of employees in our particular area. That's regional effects really matter. And so you do. I could see in the numbers in your study, what you see on the ground is that a lot of companies are saying, hey, I've got to get these employees aboard now. Because anybody that's in a business knows the challenges with employment, the training, the getting into the culture of the organization, being able to really build that continuity. Labor still makes up a enormous portion of a lot of the industry's cost. And therefore, as you're trying to make sure that you can secure employment in a really tight market, sometimes you do jump ahead. Sometimes you say, hey, I have to beat my competition to this, and that usually means good things for salaries, right? As competition comes, you have to outbid others and to hold and maintain employees. And I think, as you said, that's likely to kick in at some point, maybe a little bit more than we've seen. But certainly, I think the results that you show are that companies are interested in being very proactive and getting out there and finding those employees in the local market that can help their needs.
Yes, they are, and it is very interesting as an economist to look and be in the positive environment, because we talk very often when things started to go down, because there are indicators that come up ahead of time and you see them and you talk about them, and people say, oh, why are you talking negatively about the economy? And just reporting the numbers.
Yeah.
This is the way they are. And right now, they're all fantastic. And they look very high. There are some nuances about them. The change in the momentum in particularly purchasing is something to be concerned about, because as still demand for employment is going up, why is purchasing starting to trend down? And that's something to be concerned about as we are going forward. In Lehigh Valley, one of the indicators that I always use is initial unemployment claims. One of the biggest values this has is that this is not a sample. This is the entire population.
Yes.
People go register that they apply for an initial for unemployment claim, and the state keeps a record of it, and we get those numbers, so we know the totality of this process. And we are in a place that we have been, this is the fourth time in 40 years that we are in this place. Very tight labor market. And employment, payroll employment in particular, in Lehigh Valley is going up pretty rapidly. Interestingly enough, not as fast as national average, which is 1.6%. We are at 1.3%, still a very respectable number. But it is the labor market in Lehigh Valley is really hot, and it will become red hot probably in less than a year time.
Yeah, those are impressive numbers that you see from those unemployment claims. And again, to get comparatively on a level that we saw in the era before the Great Recession, era in the 1990s in the local markets, by many of these metrics that are part of your study that you're incorporating, we're at a place that we haven't been in a considerably long time. But where we have been before, and people look off and think, okay, you know, it's always the current is the worst, the best. it's certainly a robust labor market, local economy, but it not that distant in the future. We saw some of those places where the numbers were equally good.
Yeah. And we are closing in at 8 years of recovery. In a quarter or so, a couple of quarters, we're going to get to this being the longest recovery. The last one was, the longest one is the 1990s, where it lasted almost 9 years. So this is starting to catch up to that. And the only thing to remember is that this is not unheard of. We were here before. And not all that long time ago, but we are catching up and we are getting in this place. Now, one of the things that is also very interesting is the change in the composition of jobs that exist in the country. I was looking at the numbers, and I think what I'm being told is we're getting to the end of this segment. We're going to pick this up on the next one. This is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY.
Celtic Fair, a celebration of Celtic music and culture from its roots in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Brittany, and Galicia to its branches in Australia, Cape Breton, Canada, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and the Lehigh Valley. Music, interviews, and a weekly culture calendar every Thursday from 7 to 9 here on WDIY.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
This is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY. My guest this evening is Dr. Pierce Boyack, Professor of Political Science and Director of the Muhlenberg College's Institute of Public Opinion. Thank you for coming, Chris.
Thanks.
In this segment, we start with talking about the changing face of employment in the country and particularly Lehigh Valley. And one of the things we actually talked in the break was that how in the 1850s, one out of every two jobs in the United States was in agriculture. Now, agriculture is one out of every 100 jobs. And manufacturing at one time was huge. But even in terms of not only percentage-wise, it has dropped. In terms of total number of people working in manufacturing, 1979 was a peak. Since then, the number is dropping. Mind you, we are manufacturing a lot more. People say, oh, we don't manufacture anything. No. We do manufacture twice as much as we did in 1979. We just do it with less than half of the number of people. And that is even over employment in that sector because automation in manufacturing is coming a lot faster. And for the Lehigh Valley, in 1979, one out of every two jobs was manufacturing. Now it's barely 15%, or now it's about 10% of all the jobs is manufacturing. And what is expanding is, of course, transportation, warehousing, which is explosive growth, and healthcare, which held the previous fastest growing sector, appears to have been reaching a leveling off at and at least not expanding anywhere close as fast as the warehousing and transportation. That last 12 months was something like 14.5% growth. This is growing very, very rapidly. However, it is a interesting part of it from an analyst point of view. that as much as the demand for the sector is unbelievably high, fully automated warehouses are currently operating, and self-driving trucks are being tested, and they have gone beyond beta testing. They are at the position of trying to get secure legal permits from different states to be able to drive them. In my mind, there is no doubt that in five years' time, we're going to see a lot of them on the roads. And in 10 years' time, maybe that's the only type that will be on the road. It never gets tired. It doesn't have to clock every 8 hours and stop driving. It does not require healthcare cost. It is doing all it does and very automatically. And reality is, we are not about to get to the age of Jetsons. We are there.
No, it's I was hoping I'd get to see that in my life, and we're seeing it more and more. And looking at your study again, Cameron, you look at sector employment in the Lehigh Valley, and I think it tells a fascinating tale. I came to the Valley in 2000, and I look back at your charts, and in 2000, there was a similar number of people in healthcare, retail, and manufacturing in the Lehigh Valley. They were all about manufacturing, retail, higher, yeah. And healthcare. Yeah. Manufacturing was the highest by far in 2020. Today, only 18 years later, healthcare is the single biggest provider in the area, and the area like manufacturing has remained fairly constant since the Great Recession, but down significantly since 2000. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, an area like retail, for example, where we've seen more or less the same amount of people in retail as we did 20 years ago in the Lehigh Valley. But the one sector that has changed since the Great Recession, in addition to healthcare, the most is that transportation and warehouse industry. And anybody that lives in the Lehigh Valley doesn't need to drive far to see that, right? The expansion, if just in our physical landscape, mm-hmm. of warehouses. And as you mentioned, very different scenes in different warehouses, right? Some fully automated, some still using lots of labor. On the whole, it's become the fastest growing part of our local economy as sector employment. And as you mentioned, however, and you see these changes like you did in agriculture and manufacturing, sometimes fairly abruptly change. Automation and the effects of technology on an industry like transportation and warehouse could be pretty quick. So it'll be interesting to see how that fast-growing segment of the economy is affected by that moving forward. But there's no doubt when you think about the portrait that is the Lehigh Valley economy in 2018, the prominence of the transportation and warehouse industry has risen so dramatically in a relatively short period of time.
Yeah. One of the problems that is part of what is happening, and it is hard to see, is that we always associated automation with something mechanical. Okay, if it's going to stamp something, okay, an automatic machine will do it, but somebody has to still supervise it. Now the machines do the supervision on their own, and somebody sits there in their office, and it shows how many rounds each of those machines has worked, and if one of them is not as efficient as it should be, and just tweak it to become more efficient. But it is not limited to manufacturing and that type of a thing. There is a software, and I'm not going to plug it, that does your taxes. And I saw their latest advertising. It talks to you. You can talk to it, and it talks back. And there were entities that were providing tax. You know, you have a 1009, you're 1040, you want a simple tax, you go to one of these places in a strip mall and pay them a couple of $100 and they do it, and it was very efficient and all of that. They have no business there, because you sit home and give $35 to buy this thing on your cell phone, and you don't even have to put pants on, and you can do all your taxes, and it's all done. And the thing files it for you, does all of those things. This is the direction that it is coming to areas where we didn't have that. There was a time that if you have a lot of money, you will hire a money manager with major brokerage houses, and they will charge you maybe 1.5%, 1.75% of the value of your asset to manage it for you. And then even if they sold or bought anything, they will still charge you for that. But a huge expense. And people who did this kind of thing still do buy yachts, airplanes, all those types of things. But one of the major houses has started a robo-advisor. See, when you talked with your money advisor, financial advisor, the guy got your information, put it in the computer. Computer gives an idea. Now, he humanizes it and plays golf with you if you have a lot of money, and tells you, in my case, you have a hamburger, and tells me that. So you would know what is happening there, and it's very interesting. The robo-advisor, you type in the information, exact information you gave your human advisor, and it gives you all the answers it gave the human advisor to tell you on a golf course.
Without the frustration of golf.
Without the frustration of golf, yes. Well, you're in political science. You have to learn the economist way of playing golf. You guys have it all wrong. You're going for a lowest score. For the same money, we hit more times. We get more hits for the money.
You're getting your use. Your club use is maximized.
Yes. You have to change that paradigm.
I like it. I follow that path.
Chris, the businesses participating in our survey expected much, much higher increases in revenues back late last year when the tax breaks, particularly for businesses, were announced. They expected increases of more than 7%. That has been trimmed down now to about 4%. But they are still quite positive about the where they are going. And in terms of the momentum, we still see that the businesses are looking at a positive momentum for where they are going. But also that has been trimmed down from where it was. Again, I go back to this thing, the sugar high aspect, that when all of a sudden you get a windfall, a lot of things look so much better. And then when you spend the windfall and it's not repeating itself, then it is time to say, okay, what do I do now? And a lot of entities are adjusting to the new process as they're going forward. And that is having an effect on the economy, because we saw this huge jump coming in, particularly with consumer expenditure going high. One of the reasons for the 4.1% advance estimate for GDP in second quarter is the huge increase in consumer expenditures, led by more than 9% increase in consumer purchase of durable goods. And durable goods is a bellwether thing. We are driving the same car, and everybody tells us advertising that this your car is obsolete, all of those things. Well, if the economy is not doing well, we find a way to make the obsolete work. Economy does very well. Oh, this is obsolete. I can't live with this. And people do buy new things. You know, why fix it? Oh, come on. Changing a tire? Ah, that takes such a long time. Let's buy a new car. But that's a sign of extreme happiness, high level of consumer satisfaction that comes in at times where you feel your income is really high, and go through that process. We see signs of that, particularly with second quarter data that shows more than 9% increase in purchase of durable goods. It's huge. I want to see what happens in the following quarters as we are looking at, okay, after this wave goes through, what would follow it? Because that is very important part of this. we look at these aspects of kicks in the economy, when you kick the economy forward, is it just one forward movement, or is it something that will build on itself?
No, that's a great point, Cameron. And you're thinking about this, you know, so it was last year when those tax cuts came. Mm-hmm. They kicked in at the beginning of this year. You can see, as you said, kind of the rush of energy and activity based on those cuts in terms like purchase of durable goods. And what's interesting from a couple perspectives to me is both political and on an economic mm-hmm. front and the merger of those two things. One is from a political perspective, certainly there was an anticipation that the tax cuts would give a boost to both the president and the Republican Congress that had put those through, largely without much Democrat support. Has that been baked in any of the gain from that earlier in the year already? And by the time we get to midterm elections, that doesn't have a lot of benefit to the incumbent party, which in a political cycle like we're in right now is usually bad to the president's party in midterm elections. Mm-hmm. So the political effect of that that tax cut, I think, it remains to be seen, and the proof will be in the pudding this November in many ways. But also from an economic perspective, as you think, sure, it put money in the economy. That's mm-hmm. what tax cuts do. Tariffs take it out. Tax cuts put it in. The cost from a fiscal policy is debt, mm-hmm. and debt and deficits, right? And there are a lot of indicators that if you're following the level of the deficit this year and its impact on debt, that we're seeing that spike. Those things, while not always easy to predict economically, do matter. You know, deficits do take a toll. They take a mm-hmm. toll on things like interest rates. They take a toll on macroeconomic performance over time. And so that aspect of mm-hmm. it, I think, is going to be something that a lot of people want to watch mm-hmm. moving into the second half of this year and next year. How does that start to weigh on economic growth and the performance of the economy, both in nationally in places like the Lehigh Valley?
Well, deficit has gone up this year by 21%. Part of it is very simple. It's simple math. You are, regardless of what the long-term impacts would be, there are a lot of difference of opinion in that. But in the short term, nothing has happened. All of a sudden, government cuts back their revenue by a very large amount. So initially, revenues goes down, and the Department of Treasury data shows that. And expenditures, on the other hand, goes up. As it has increased all the time. So you are looking at built-in process of deficit increasing. And there are people say, no, this will eventually pay for itself. That is yet to be proven. Historically, we have not seen an indication of that. Interestingly enough, every time we created surplus or increased significantly the difference between expenditures and revenues was after a tax raise, not after a tax break. And this is data going to Eisenhower years, Department of Treasury. It's not my data. Anybody can look it up and see this. This is very straightforward process. But when you look at the current process is as a result of increase in deficit and the fact that the Federal Reserve is unwinding its balance sheet, we are having higher interest rates, and this is going to go up even more. The Fed is slated to raise minimum of one, maybe two times its interest rate before the end of this year. But I'll be amiss not asking you as political scientists, what's going to happen in November?
Oh, well, it's a great question. And I'll talk about it from a systematic or a cyclical aspect, Cameron. It's historically, midterm elections are punitive to the president's party. The president's party takes a beating in midterm elections mm-hmm. after they come into office. Only twice since World War II has the president's party picked up seats in the House of Representatives And they were under fairly unique circumstances. 1998, during the impeachment of Bill Clinton, he remained very popular when he was the impeachment happened. His numbers went up and his party gained seats. And just 4 years later, the only other time that midterms have benefited a president was under George W. Bush after 9/11. His party gained seat. Those are the outliers. The average loss for the president's party is in the mid-20s in terms of seats. Oh. And I'm a big fan, just like economics is based on cycles. You know, it's not perfect. We can't see exactly. But we could tell in the big picture that it's likely that the president's party is going to lose seats, especially when the president's not that popular. And right now, the president's numbers nationally, historically, are not very good in terms of approval ratings. So I would be absolutely shocked if the Democrats don't pick up significant numbers of seats in the House of Representatives. I imagine it'll be right around that range of the historic numbers, which would put them in a chance to take over the House. Mm-hmm. Senate's a little different story. Democrats are holding a lot of seats. They're defending a lot of seats. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a third of the Senate that comes up every 2 years. This happens to be a cycle where they're defending a lot of seats in a lot of states that were won by President Trump, some of them very handily. So it's going to be harder for the Democrats to pick up seats in the Senate, but I would be surprised if it ends up in a fairly close balance in the Senate after November. It should be a fascinating fall, and there's going to be lots to watch.
So you don't think that the impact of the tax breaks and stuff would carry through the elections?
That's a really great and powerful question. I think the Republicans did get a little bit of a boost out of the tax cut once it happened, although it was fairly divisive in our public opinion polls. You know, it was mixed public on the whole. I think it did have a benefit. But in some ways, it's ancient news already. And as we move into the election cycle coming up in the fall, I don't know how salient, how important it will be to voters in them making up their mind. It's you know, the politics of the present, and that's the politics of the past already.
When would you know? I want to invite you back on this program and ask you that.
You'll get my best results after the election. That's when I'm the most accurate and the most efficient. So let me know then.
Spoken like a social scientist. You'll be a good analyst after the fact.
That's right.
This is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY.